Good afternoon. 507 here, News Talk 105.9 WMAL, where we're making sense of the news. Coming up, Steve Malloy is with us. We'll talk about energy and the weather with him as the EPA gets put in its place by the United States Supreme Court in a unanimous decision. How often do we get one of those? Pretty neat. Although the media is not telling you the truth on that story. I'll sort it all out for you coming up. And you can join us at 888-630-9625, 888-630-WMAL. Joe Biden this week, to honor George Floyd, the late George Floyd, decided that he would veto a bipartisan piece of legislation that had cleared both the House and the Senate. And you can only do that if you have Democrat support, especially in the United States Senate. It did. And the goal of that bill was to turn back a law in D.C. that made it much harder for police to do their jobs. Much harder. So Joe Biden just vetoed it. Very proudly, he said he did it to honor George Floyd. This is not good for D.C. residents. It's not certainly not good for black residents in D.C. This doesn't honor their lives. It makes things more dangerous for them. And here to discuss all of this and give us a sense of what it really means is Greg Pemberton. He's the chairman of the D.C. Police Union, and he joins us now. Greg, good to have you with us, sir.
Vince, thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Tell me what the difference would be if Joe Biden had signed this piece of legislation repealing this D.C. police law. How much would things have changed for the average cop in the city?
He had an opportunity to save us from catastrophe, and he chose not to. As you know, and I'm sure your listeners know, I've been talking about this bill because it's been in effect on a temporary basis in the District of Columbia since June of 2020. So we're approaching the three-year anniversary of this bill being originally enacted. And so now we have the empirical data of how that bill has affected the District of Columbia. And we know that we've lost 1,200 police officers. 45% of them have resigned, just walked away from the department. Resignations are now outpacing retirements. We're losing about 200 to 250 police officers net loss per year. We've gone from 3,800 police officers in 2020 to 3,200 police officers today. And as you know, crime has completely exploded out of control. We're on pace for our third year in a row of exceeding 200 homicides. We are regularly exceeding 550 armed carjackings. We just passed 280 carjackings this year recently. Every single crime category across the board is up, some as much as 20 or even 50%, depending on the type of crime. And all of this can be attributed to this 27 subtitle omnibus bill that completely eliminates anything that looks like responsible, professional, constitutional policing in the district. And it has driven the best cops we have out of the city and has allowed crime and criminals to proliferate in every sector and every corner of the city. Joe Biden had an opportunity today. The House looked at this. They knew this was a ridiculous bill that was destroying public safety in the city. The Senate looked at it, said the same thing. They sent it to the White House, and he decides to veto it and gives us a completely hollow response about why he does it. And now we're back to square one dealing with this complete mess that is crime and public safety in the District of Columbia.
14 Democrats in the House joined Republicans to pass this, and in the Senate, 8 Democrats joined in with Republicans. Clearly a bipartisan effort, mostly Republicans trying to rescue the district here. I noticed that the news coverage does not explain at all what this law has done to the district at all. I'm reading, it gives you these broad generalizations as if it's totally fine, and of course it could stay in place. So this is what the Washington Post, this is how the Washington Post describes the Comprehensive Policing and Justice Reform Amendment Act of 2022. They say it includes provisions restricting certain policing tactics and expanding access to police disciplinary records and body camera footage. And that's it. That's how they describe it. What are they missing?
Everything. That's not even remotely correct as to what they're saying. And as you said, it's a complete generalization to allow people to just sort of adopt it to say, well, that doesn't sound so bad. But this is a terrible bill. So it eliminates all the collective bargaining rights of police officers. It eliminates all their due process as it pertains to complaints that they receive or misconduct investigations that they become subject of. It changes all of the use of force reforms. So instead of using the Graham versus Connor Supreme Court standard, there's now this totality of the circumstances Monday morning quarterback where they can retroactively decide you did something wrong, even though you may not have been aware of any of the facts that they're looking at. It creates a public database of all police officer discipline retroactive to the day you were hired, even if that was 30 years ago. It exempts the FOIA rules that it creates a carve out to the FOIA exemptions. There used to be a prohibition on FOIA requests for employee personnel jackets. This bill now carves it out for police officers, so anyone can now FOIA an officer's complete personnel jacket with all of the information that might be in there, including health information and whether or not they've sought counseling for grief or trauma, their spousal information, their health insurance. All of this information exists in these jackets, and now anyone can get access to them. It prohibits the use of officers to look at their own body-worn camera footage to complete their own police reports or their own investigations. It demands that all uses of force be published within 5 days along with the officer's name in those cases, even if the officers use force justifiably. I could go on and on and on about this bill because there are 27 subtitles in here. Each one is as horrific as the last. But unfortunately, I think the reason that they've won this battle is because it is such a complicated topic. It's very hard to get the correct and honest and truthful information in front of a broad swath of people. And places like the Washington Post can just dismiss this as a quote-unquote police reform bill. That's absolutely not what it is. This handcuffs cops. This drives good cops out of the city. And this allows criminals to do whatever they want to do with little to no retribution or accountability.
All of those things are important, what you just raised. Let me highlight two, though, that really jump out at me as a non-cop, as a guy who's just concerned about what's going on in the city. One is the ambiguous standard for the use of force. How can you be a cop if you don't have a clear definition for when force is justified and how to use it?
This is one of the most concerning things, is because the Graham versus Connor standard says that uses of force are judged based on the facts that are available to the officer at the time the force was used. The courts recognize that officers have to make split-second decisions, right, life or death decisions, and that they can only make those decisions based on whatever they're able to see. And if an objectively reasonable officer would have done the same thing, the force is justified. And that's been the standard for 50 or 60 years in judging use of force. What this bill does is it says now any trier of fact, any finder of fact, can use the totality of the circumstances, meaning facts that would not have been available to the officer at the time the force was used can now be used to judge whether or not the force was justified.
Let's talk about a hypothetical.
Monday morning quarterback.
Then. Yes, let's talk about a hypothetical for this then. So in other words, if a suspect reaches into his pocket and the officer believes in good faith that he could be reaching for a weapon, would that justify use of deadly force?
Let's say, for example, an officer gets a lookout, he arrives on the scene of a shooting, there's a description of the suspect, the officer sees someone matching that description who begins fleeing the scene, and he's got something in his hand, he chases him into a dark alley at 2 o'clock in the morning, and he wheels around and raises a black object pointed at the officer. The officer, an objectively reasonable officer, could say, well, I think this person's going to shoot me. But if it turns out that was a BB gun or a replica weapon or something else, now on Monday morning, when they look at all that information through the crime scene reports and the 9 body-worn cameras and the CCTV and the cell phone footage and the witness statements, they can say, well, he shouldn't have done that because that makes this shooting unjustifiable.
Right.
And now, not only is that officer subject to administrative penalties, but also civil and even criminal penalties.
Well, this is how you get
not a place. Go ahead.
Yes. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt. I just think this is also how you get cops killed, too, because, I mean, that breeds hesitancy, doesn't it?
Well, right. So not only are people going to be hesitant about using force, but there's also going to be an apprehension in doing any police work, right? I mean, if you're in your car and you're supposed to get out and engage in police work, you're now going to be very fearful of doing that because of the fact that even if you do your job properly under the law, constitutionally, follow every single policy that there is,
right,
someone could later come back and tell you, nope, you did it wrong. And so when you talk about the chilling effect of how officers are going to be very apprehensive about engaging in the proper kind of police work, this is just a complete nightmare scenario, which is why Congress took this up and why they, as you stated, in a bipartisan fashion, voted it through. Unfortunately, when it went down the street to the White House, the president didn't see it the same way.
So, okay, so if, based on what you're saying, then what happens up happening, Monday morning quarterbacking, the body camera footage, for instance, can be used to attack a police officer. But cops can't actually use their own body camera footage when filling out a police report?
That's right. And what's interesting is when the union actually agreed to adopt this body-worn camera policy, we were one of the first major cities in the country to adopt these citywide. We said, listen, sure, it can be a police accountability tool, make sure everybody's doing their job properly, but we also want to use it as an evidence collection tool so that officers can do their job better. They can make better police reports. They can go back and review exactly what people said or exactly what the juxtaposition of what a crime scene was. And of course, everyone agreed with that in 2015. But now here we are in 2023, and they've said, nope, you're not allowed to look at your body-worn camera footage ever. And so even after 6 years of training officers to use this tool to make sure that they're doing their job properly, it's now been taken away from them for some unknown reason. And now police reports are not matching the video because they can't look at it. And the courts and defense attorneys and judges are now saying, well, these cops all must be liars. And these prosecutions are falling apart as and officers are being labeled as liars in the courtroom.
Well, that this is designed to be an opportunity for a criminal to get away with it. That's what that is, because there's no other explanation for it. Why would you do that? If you have the video of the encounter and you can take accurate transcriptions and accurate depictions of what happened, why wouldn't you use it?
That's exactly right. That's what all of these subtitles are designed to do, is to eliminate police officers, to eliminate their ability to do their job, and to make it much easier for criminals to get away with the behavior that they engage in. And they couch this all as police reform or accountability. But really what it is it's just an opportunity for bedlam. And so that there are, this is the back door to defunding the police. If you can't take all their money away and you can't fire them all, then let's just make it so absolutely miserable to do this job in the city that nobody will ever want to do it again, which is where we are now.
What happens next? I mean, this is a big deal that Congress actually passed this this bill, got it through to the president of the United States to overturn the sad state of where D.C. policing's headed. What can be done now?
That's a good question. What we're hoping is that there might be some cooler heads that could prevail in the city council, realizing that looking at the empirical data, realizing that these things are not working, that they're not functional. However, I don't have high hopes for that. The other option is that Congress takes up some of these issues individually. The president did say that there were a lot of things in the bill that he doesn't like. Maybe there's a way to bring those things back to him individually and see if he'll sign those. I don't know. I think we're at a place right now where we're sort of collecting ourselves and trying to do a damage assessment and see if there are avenues that we can move forward to try to resolve this. Because if we don't, we will continue to lose 2 to 250 officers per year until there's zero. Because this bill is what's prohibiting people from being actually applying for this job and becoming police officers here in the city. And until it goes away, that problem's not going to change.
And if D.C. loses more cops, at this point, we can now say that would be Biden's fault. Biden would share responsibility for that.
I agree wholeheartedly. Absolutely. He had an opportunity to save this entire city from all of this nonsense that the city council has created, and he chose not to. He chose to go with the political false narrative that all police officers are bad, and that we need these provisions to keep them accountable.
Greg Pemberton, chairman of the D.C. Police Union, thank you for joining us on this. This is a very important story for the district. I hope better days are ahead for D.C. cops and specifically for the well-being of our city. Thank you, sir. You know, there's that Durham report. We got the breaking news today that John Durham is going to be speaking to Congress coming up on June 20th and June 21st. On the 20th, he's behind closed doors. On the 21st, he will be doing it in public, where he'll lay out in some detail the effort by Hillary Clinton to sabotage the 2016 election and all of the credulity or malign behavior of the FBI and so many upper-level government officials. It's just disgraceful. So hopefully John Durham can give a really useful a recitation of the events coming up later in June. But if you had, if you were a part of an organization and you were at the upper levels of that organization and a thorough report was done on your failures, wouldn't that be the kind of thing that you would read very quickly? You'd immediately, you'd set aside everything and you'd read it. You'd be able, okay, what did we do wrong and how can we prevent it from happening in the future? What's going on in the FBI, right? That would be your first move. Not so much. Not for these FBI officials. We've got Jill Murphy. She's the FBI Assistant Director of Counterintelligence, who is testifying this week before Congress. And Congressman August Pfluger, great name, asks whether or not she has actually read the Durham report. Take a listen to this exchange.
Special Counsel Durham assessed that neither U.S. law enforcement nor the intelligence community appears to have possessed any actual evidence of collusion in their holdings at the commencement of the Crossfire Hurricane investigation, and that the Bureau subsequently discounted or willfully ignored material that did not support the narrative of a collusive relationship between Trump and Russia. As the Deputy Assistant Director for the FBI's Counterintelligence Division, are you familiar with this report?
I have not read that report, sir.
Uh-oh.
You have not read the Durham report?
I have not yet read the Durham report, no, sir.
Uh-oh.
I'm honestly speechless at this point in time. I'm not sure what to think of this as someone who has spent an entire career in counterintelligence. Special Counsel Durham found that the FBI moved too quickly with its investigation of the 2016 campaign and relied on uncorroborated evidence when launching its investigation. Does this concern you?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
That there was a very fast pace of the investigation and that uncorroborated evidence was used when launching the investigation. Does that concern you?
So again, sir, I haven't read the Durham report, so I'm not sure, you know, I have no knowledge of
Somebody goes, it's counterterrorism. What is she doing? Yeah. I'm sorry, sir. I've been too busy preparing for the pronoun symposium that we have coming up. I haven't been able to read the Durham report yet. But eventually, after we take a gender-neutral bathroom break, maybe I'll be able to read it. What have you been doing?
Does this fall under the counterintelligence umbrella?
The Durham report? I'm sure portions of it do, yes, sir.
She can speak in generalities about a report she hasn't read.
Does a suggestion or an accusation of election collusion between a foreign government and the United States or a person or an entity in the United States fall under counterintelligence?
Yes, sir.
So the alleged collusion between Mr. Trump in 2016 and Russia would have fallen under the counterintelligence division of the FBI?
Yes, sir.
And you have not read the Durham report?
I have not read the Durham report.
Is there a reason? Is it not required to?
No, I just haven't had time.
I'm just waiting for the movie to come out. I don't forget the book. I'll just wait for the film. I'll watch it that way.
Ms. Murphy, do you actively investigate counterintelligence with foreign entities around the world?
Yes, sir.
And this is a sincere question. Does election collusion worry you?
Yeah, obviously election collusion would worry me. Yes, sir.
What kind of answer is that? Yeah. Yeah. Do you normally, if you're doing congressional testimony and you're an FBI assistant director of counterintelligence, you just give flippant 14-year-old responses? Yeah.
Worry you?
Yeah, obviously election collusion would worry me, yes, sir.
Does any malign influence to the United States worry you?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I would highly recommend reading that because we spent 4 years discussing that. There was uncorroborated evidence. The Durham report specifically outlines the outcome of that.
What a waste of everyone's time.
It's very disappointing to hear this.
You know, that's a conscious decision on her part. Or somebody's part. That's a conscious decision. Not to be prepared. Not to read the Durham report. To show up and not even... Of course you'll be asked about that. You're the FBI Assistant Director of Counterintelligence. One of the biggest stories about your agency on the planet just came out. You think you'd maybe brush up a little bit. Get the Cliff Notes version. You know, just have somebody brief it to you before you show up in front of Congress and answer a few damn questions. You think he'd be ready, right? Yeah. Yeah. Coming up, we'll be joined by Steve Malloy as the EPA gets put in its place by the United States Supreme Court in a 9-0 vote. It's an important story. Steve will help us break it down. It's ahead.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.
Good afternoon. 5:35 here. News Talk 105.9 WMAL, where we're making sense of the news. You can join us today at 888-630-9625, 888-630-WMAL. Would appreciate your calls as we head into Memorial Day weekend. Hope you have a very blessed Memorial Day. Spend some time in prayer and contemplation about the heroes of our country, the people who gave their lives, sacrificed it all for us, and the inspiration that they served, and that we may live up to their sacrifice, that we may be worthy of their sacrifice as we head into Memorial Day weekend. Again, so grateful to have you with us. We had a big story yesterday that the media immediately set about mangling. About a Supreme Court decision. The Supremes knocked back the EPA's power yesterday in a 9-0 vote. Put very simply, it involved some homeowners, some landowners on Priest Lake, Idaho. It's a beautiful lake, by the way. I've been there once. It was amazing. It's really nice. But Priest Lake, Idaho, they wanted to build a home there. And the EPA got in the way and said, you can't build on your own property, because somehow they were saying they were regulating the waters of the United States when no such waters were on the property. What are they even talking about? But this family has had to fight for years for a positive result and finally got one yesterday, a 9-0 vote in their favor. I'll get into more of the details here in a moment, but first let me bring in my guest, Steve Malloy. Is the senior END legal fellow and former Trump-Pence EPA transition team member. Steve, great to have you with us, sir.
Hey, Vince, thanks for having me back.
It's good to have you. It's funny, I'm looking at like the Washington Post coverage of this yesterday and so many of these news outlets, and they say that it was a 5-4 decision. It wasn't a 5-4 decision. There were a couple of opinions written, and there were 5-4 splits on the opinions, but this was a 9-0 decision. And what did it find, Steve?
No, that's right. It was 9-0 for the Sacketts. The Sacketts had bought their property in 2004. In 2007, they tried to build on it. EPA stopped them, said the Sacketts sued. They went to the court. They went to the Supreme Court in 2012, and that court ruled 9-0 in their favor. Unfortunately, all they did was send it back to the lower courts, where EPA, you know, stopped them again. And so finally, you know, yesterday, they got another 9-0 decision in their favor. Unfortunately, once again, it's, you know, to go back to court, so it's going to take them some more time. But it's really a huge decision. It's not 9-0 on the main point, but it was, you know, you got 5 votes for the main point, which is that EPA engages in regulatory overreach when it tries to regulate wetlands, which are basically, you know, lands near navigable waterways like lakes and rivers. EPA had interpreted their authority to the point where they could regulate mud puddles.
Yes.
I mean, literally regulate mud puddles. you know, any place where there was water, and, you know, if EPA could sort of trace, even an underground path to an actual navigable waterway, mm-hmm. like a river or a lake, then EPA could regulate that mud puddle. But the Supreme Court, decision written by Alito, who, you know, when you get an Alito decision, you know which way that's going. His decision said, look, if there's not an obvious connection between, you know, the body of water or the piece of land and a navigable waterway, then EPA's got no authority.
Yeah, so no more regulating puddles.
Yeah, so it's a huge win. There's the environmentalists were saying that this takes 118 million acres, which is the size of off the table for EPA to regulate, which is about the size of California. So that's just fantastic news.
That is fantastic news, because the theory behind why the federal government would be involved in any of this is the role that it plays in interstate commerce, right? So like where bodies of water actually connect between states, it makes sense that the federal government may have some say so. But the way that the government had interpreted its power is to keep expanding and expanding and expanding to the point where you had water that wasn't even connected to navigable waterways and was being regulated by the federal government, no?
Yeah, I mean, this is, even where waterways are solely within a state, you know, if EPA can claim some connection to a navigable waterway someplace where it has jurisdiction, then EPA can regulate that too. EPA just interprets its authority as broadly as possible. EPA thinks it's, you know, in charge of everything and everybody. EPA, you know, there is this UN program called Agenda 21, and the program basically is to regulate every inch of land on the planet, every inch in land and water. And, you know, EPA is fully on board with that. They've used this Clean Water Act provision where they can regulate wetlands over broadly. And, you know, finally, the court has put a limit. This is a huge loss for the EPA. The Obama administration had tremendously expanded EPA's reach. The Trump administration tried to rein it in a little bit.
Yeah.
But then Biden came back and expanded it, you know, beyond what Obama had. And so, you know, finally now the court has reined it in, and the left, of course, is beside itself.
So what happens now? I mean, now that we don't need all the puddle regulators, do they get fired? Do we get rid of all the puddle people inside the EPA, or do they keep working? And the EPA ignore all of this?
Yeah. So here's the problem. I mean, it was a great decision, you know, once you get into court, and if you can survive litigation with EPA, as I mentioned earlier, the Sacketts, you know, first got into it with EPA in 2007. Well, it's 2023 now. How many people can afford to litigate with EPA for 16 years? I mean, the government has endless deep pockets. And so the court's decision, you know, despite the court's decision, EPA is still going to mess with people, because that's just how regulators are. They're arrogant.
Yeah, so if some other family wants to build a house, the EPA is going to get up in their face and then let them litigate it until the EPA is told to stand down again. But the only way they can do that is if their pockets are deep enough to endure the battle.
Yeah, because, you know, the government has limitless pockets. And for something like this, you know, these sorts of development cases, yeah, the federal government is going to fight that. Biden administration is not going to go away. They don't care about the Supreme Court. We have a real, you know, you talk about insurrection. Well, it's the Biden administration and EPA. You know, EPA right now is trying to regulate coal plants again. A year after the Supreme Court said, EPA, you can't, because Congress hasn't given you the authority to do it. But here they are back again trying to regulate coal plants, you know, on the basis of climate. So, I mean, it's really an out-of-control agency. It was one of the earliest out-of-control agencies. Now we see there's lots of agencies out of control, but EPA was one of the first. And Republicans have been uniquely unsuccessful in reining it in.
On the other side, Democrats, Chuck Schumer in the Senate, is very angry about this Supreme Court decision. Somebody on his staff tweeting, quote, this MAGA Supreme Court,
yeah,
is continuing to erode our country's environmental laws. Make no mistake, this ruling will mean more polluted water and more destruction of wetlands. We'll keep fighting to protect our waters. Steve Malloy, will this result in polluted water?
Absolutely not. It's got nothing to do with that. And just on the MAGA comment, I have never seen Sotomayor, Kagan, or, you know, Ketanji Brown Jackson at a MAGA meeting. It just doesn't happen. And and they voted for the Sacketts too. No, this provision in the Clean Water Act is strictly, it's not about pollution. There's no, EPA doesn't have to seize your land because you've been doing something wrong or there's been pollution. They can just seize the land and stop your development if they think something is going to happen.
Yeah. Look, as you point out, the lefty justices all sided with the Sacketts here. So they must have recognized that this was cartoonishly too broad, the power that that the EPA had assumed unto itself. They may disagree on the standard that Alito set forth, but still, they clearly detected that regulating puddles should not be the business of the EPA.
Yeah, I mean, the Sacketts property was just a piece of land, you know, next to the lake in Idaho. And, you know, the Sacketts weren't doing anything other than trying to build a home there. And all of a sudden, EPA comes along and stops them and drags us out. You know, in 2012, the Sacketts won 9-0 at the Supreme Court, and EPA still didn't give in. Now, again, they've won 9-0, and I'm sure EPA is not going to give in. They're going to, you know, the decision is going back to court. There's going to be more proceedings. Will these people ever be able to build their home? It's crazy.
It is crazy that we have to keep on dealing with this. What else is on the horizon for you, Steve Malloy? What are you paying attention to out of this administration? Because their appetite for banning things that are useful to us seems, you know, unquenchable. They're moving on gas stoves. They're moving on the internal combustion engine. What are you seeing?
Right. Well, we've got all these huge things, and you know, of course, they are just overwhelming us with, you know, their initiatives. I mean, they want to ban coal plants and even ban natural gas plants. So, you know, what kind of electricity grid are we going to have? You know, they're going after every appliance that we have, gas stoves, dishwashers, washing machines. I mean, it's endless, and they're all trying to make them worse. I mean, they want to make dishwashers run on, you know, even less water, which, oh, my God, how is that? This is not going to work.
Well,
and then they want to end the internal combustion engine. You know, they don't want cars. The only car you can buy by, you know, 2030 is going to be an electric car.
And they want to get rid of all this. And they want to get rid of like gas powered lawn equipment, things like this.
Yeah.
And I've been looking around lately to get a power washer. I want to do my driveway. And I was just doing some comparison shopping because, you know, like putting a battery on something or plugging something, and that's kind of convenient. It's, you know, you don't have to deal with all the gas and oil. But then you look at the power difference, and it's not even close. The gas power washers are like a million times stronger and more effective than the ones you plug into the wall or put a battery on. And it's just it's very simple. It's a very simple market equation for me. I'd like something that actually does the job.
So you can imagine, like, you know, professional, you know, lawn people, I mean, they need real tools, right? Real lawn mowers, real blowers,
yes,
and real weed whackers, but they're going to be forced to use these toys. In DC has already banned gas powered lawn equipment, unless you're, you know, using it on federal property, of course.
Right. And a lot of these jurisdictions have been making these claims that it's like for noise or something. Like, oh, it's a noise purpose, but it does seem like they have it out for like just efficient products.
Yeah, no, look, they're just against, you know, our standard of living in general. There's a new movement, No Mow May, where, you know, the Greens are trying to get people to stop mowing in May. The idea is that, you know, wildflowers will grow and pollinators will thrive and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, weeds will take over. Your dandelions will go crazy. This is a terrible idea.
Well, then at the same time, they claim that global warming is making allergy season worse. Well, yeah, if you never mow your lawn, you're going to get lots of weeds, lots of pollen. You're going to be allergic to something.
Oh, man. All right, well, have fun with all the snakes that move in. All right. Well, Steve Malloy, thanks as always, sir. And please have a very great Memorial Day weekend. Really appreciate
thanks,
your time
you
today,
too.
Sir.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, it's so funny, though. I was looking at all this coverage yesterday of this Supreme Court decision as it was coming down. And they were all saying 5-4 decision. And then you look at the details. You're like, no, it's not. It was a 9-0 decision. The EPA got its butt handed to them. And that was the core question. I'm glad we got into that with Steve. It's just like, hey, what's going to happen next? Well, you know, the Biden administration, their attitudes towards the Supreme Court, just ignore them. Just keep making people's lives miserable and dare them to litigate, dare them to try and take it to some sort of judge to say, hey, we told you to stop doing this. You better stop doing it this time. What are the consequences here? All right, our buddy Jason in Kensington's calling in now. Maryland, line one. Jason, good afternoon. You're on the Vince Colonnade Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Vince. How you going, mate?
I'm all right.
Hey, yeah, these blowers and trimmers. I had a landscape business for about 15 years, and I got out sort of because of this was going on. But Chevy Chase has banned backpack blowers. But the problem is like when leaf season comes around and they need to get them to the curb for the trucks, all of a sudden they want the backpack blowers back in because they want to get their leaves to the street. But then once the leaf season's done, then they ban them. So it's, you know, it's like they want their job done, but they don't want to deal with the yes. rest of the year.
Yeah, you can't really easily clean up leaves by walking around blowing into a kazoo. That doesn't really do it. Yeah. You need a gas powered leaf blower to actually move a lot of these things.
No, it's like trying to circumcise someone with a water pick. It's just not going to happen. You know, it's like, but you know, it's almost like, you know, if these people lived back in caveman times, they'd be telling the cavemen, you know, what days to start their fires. You know, that's what they'd be doing.
Yeah, don't be burning that wood. Don't be burning that wood. All right, well, Jason, I'm gonna think through that analogy you just shared with us, and really appreciate you calling it. Thank you, sir.
Hey, no worries, mate.
Thanks, man. Memorial Day. Couple of NBC News headlines in the last 24 hours saying that Republicans are just dominating everything, which is kind of amazing, actually. Headline, Republicans have dominated the debt ceiling messaging. That's an NBC headline crediting Kevin McCarthy and the Republicans in the House for just absolutely handing Biden his butt. And then here's another one. Target, Bud Light, the Dodgers, and Disney have all been backed into a corner over their support of the LGBTQ community. That's a lie. That's not what this is about. The strategy has conservative activists celebrating, they say. But so a little swagger for the right now, as even NBC could admit that a bunch of really important things are happening. You know who can't acknowledge the truth, though? Joe Biden. Joe Biden had an event today with the Louisiana State University Tigers women's basketball team, and he refused to acknowledge that he has 5 granddaughters. Here's Forbes. They tweeted this. President Biden says, I've got 4 granddaughters, when in reality, he has 5.
At any rate, thank you all again for your patience for being here. Look, there's an awful lot.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time.
Yep.
Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
An awful lot to be proud of. And the way in which women's sports has come along is just incredible.
But right now I'm working on having men join it so we can ruin it.
And you're changing the name. And it's not just in sports. It's across the board in every single thing. And it's really neat to see.
Really neat.
I've got 4 granddaughters.
That's a lie.
We had some pretty good athletes. I wasn't a bad athlete. My brothers weren't. But all the real athletes in this family are women. You got it.
I don't know.
Anyway, so thank you.
I've seen Hunter Biden pull off some pretty amazing acrobatics.
For being here, Coach, I'm going to turn this over to you, and I again want to congratulate you. I assume I'll be seeing you next year.
Okay. All right. So he's got 5 granddaughters, and he just keeps on standing up there and ghoulishly claiming he has 4. So that's the president of the United States, very Catholic guy, getting up there and. Just, you know, embarrassing the country. Let me move on to something that gives us pride, Memorial Day. Let's spend the weekend. I'm going to spend the weekend, lifting a beer, maybe a burger, but also a prayer to the men and women who have gone before us, who paid the ultimate sacrifice for our country. God bless them. God bless them. A lot of people out there have family members who fit that category, Gold Star families. We honor you. We honor you and are very grateful for you. And we hope that we can all live up to the standard that your family member set. Really appreciate that. And we're going to be hitting the water this weekend. If you see a crazy boat float by you on the Potomac, That'll be me and my family. Corey is our producer. He's nice enough to invite me onto his boat. Corey is independently wealthy. He's got a massive yacht. We're going to be floating around on the Potomac. No, I'm just kidding. It's not massive, but he is ridiculously wealthy. So if you ever see us hovering around in the areas of DC that allow private helicopters, you'll know that's Corey. but we will. Are we going to raise one this weekend, Corey, to the fallen? We're going to 10. He's saying 10. We're going to raise a lot. All right. Well, God bless you. We've got the great one, Mark Levin, coming up next here on the great, always legendary WMAL.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next question, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.